Hello, Texas Ranger fans. Welcome to Scooping the Texas Rangers, a Wednesday edition. And I'll be darned if we aren't in our 26th straight day of 100+. And the guy that's co-hosting with me, I don't like because he's in Seattle and he's not in 100+ degree weather. He is the man, the myth, the legend. Although it might just be in his own mind. But Jason Churchill from Prospect Insider. What's up, Jason?
Todd, how you doing?
Doing well, doing well. And for those of you that don't know, this has got to be one of the most busiest weeks for Jason, with its all the prospects that are moving, all the names that are moving. Jason, you want to give a little bit of tidbit of how many phone calls you've received or actually made today alone?
You know, I haven't taken a lot of actual phone calls. There's been a lot of texting, a lot of emails, a lot of instant messages, a lot of direct messages on Twitter. It's a little easier than taking a phone call, and when I want specifics and somebody doesn't want to leave a paper trail, that's when I get the phone call. But there hasn't been a whole lot of that to this point, just a lot of communication in other ways.
Well, let's get started with the deal that I think really started the day, and I was going to start with Beltran, but I'll start here since it really did start the day out. And that was the deal that came down between the Chicago White Sox, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, this deal originally, and correct me if I'm wrong, was between Chicago and Toronto, but when did St. Louis get involved?
The whole idea for Toronto was to get some pieces to complete a package offer for Colby Rasmus. So it was always about St. Louis. I don't know how much St. Louis knew about that situation, because there's a chance that if you're the White Sox, you might have some interest in Colby Rasmus, that you might be able to get a deal done yourself. But the two teams talked. I mean, I think we heard that report last week or earlier this week that the White Sox and the Cardinals talked about Rasmus and Edwin Jackson, and Toronto just went out and got Jackson and tossed some other pieces into it and got Colby Rasmus. And that was a terrific deal for the Toronto Blue Jays. And I actually don't hate the deal for the White Sox either. They're not going to miss Jackson. They can toss prospect Zach Stewart into the rotation and think a little bit about next year, even though they're contending now. But he's got a good shot to at least replicate what Jackson has been giving the Chicago White Sox to this point. And they picked up Jason Fraser in the deal to bolster their bullpen, which might allow them to be able to deal another reliever. And relievers are the hot topic on the trade market right now that Rasmus and Carlos Beltran are off the market.
Well, let's stay with the Cardinals, because as you and I both heard, and I believe this was last week, Colby Rasmus's name came out and a lot of people were saying, you know, he's available. And then the Cardinals came out and said, we're absolutely not dealing him. And then a couple of days ago, that changed. Well, it didn't come from the Cardinals. Everybody was saying they're shopping Rasmus. The Cardinals came out again and said, those are just rumors. We're not shopping him. Is this what the trade deadline is all about? Is this all posturing when a GM comes out and says, we're not moving him? And San Diego's really in the same boat. You know, Jeff Passan had reported that Jeff Mora had told Mike Adams, you're not being moved. Now all of a sudden we hear that Mike Adams is being shopped. So, I mean, is this all BS or just posturing?
I think a lot of it is GM speak. I think there's a difference between shopping a player and being willing to discuss deals with clubs. And I think that's how these clubs are getting away with saying what they're saying and not being called liars, basically. The Padres aren't necessarily shopping Adams. They're not trying to trade Adams, but they're certainly open to it, or they would have put that to bed publicly a long time ago. You have to be open to moving your pieces. And that's why the Rays haven't come out and said there's just absolutely no chance that James Shields is off the market. We're not saying that, but they're also saying we're willing to talk by not coming out and saying that. So it's the same thing with San Diego. It was the same thing with the St. Louis Cardinals and Colby Rasmus. If you just don't remove him from the market and tell teams to stop calling, then you're certainly open to trading him. And I think that's the difference between telling the world that you're not shopping a player and being willing to talk about him, because I think just about every team is willing to talk about 3/4 of the roster, if not more.
Right, but San Diego, Jeff Mora didn't tell Mike Adams, we're not shopping you. He, according to Jeff Passan's report, Jeff Mora told Mike Adams, allegedly, that we're not going to trade you. So isn't that different? I can see what you're saying. Saying we're not shopping you is a little bit different than we're not trading you. But if Mike Adams is being told we're not trading you, isn't that, you know, couldn't Jeff Mora be looked at as, you know, kind of being underhanded or lying to Adams about not trading him?
I'd like to know the context between that conversation. If that conversation took place between Adams and Jeff Mora, What was the context? Was it, did Adams actually go up to Morat and say, "Hey, I've been hearing a lot of trade stuff. You know, is something going down?" And Morat said, "We're not trading you." I mean, maybe that was a response to, as far as I know, Mike Adams, we haven't struck a deal for you, and we don't have any discussions going on right now for you. So there's a lot of little details that could be left out, and we're hearing it fifth, sixth party. I mean, we're hearing it, you know, it's being reported that this person said to this person, and this person saying this, and there's a lot of details that we don't know that we'll probably never know in that situation. I would believe if Passan said that he trusts his source enough, and that source is trustworthy to that level, that Passan's source is probably correct. I would certainly buy that. But it wouldn't be the first time that a club told a player that he wasn't going to be traded, that he was traded either. So I just think, for the most part, when general managers anyway come out and say, "We're not shopping this player," it doesn't necessarily mean they're not willing to trade him. And they're not necessarily saying they're not willing to trade him, or else they would actually say that. So that's really all I'm trying to get at. And John Mozeliak never came out and said, "I'm not open to trading Kobe Rasmus. I don't want to listen to deals on Kobe Rasmussen." And you know what? That goes for just about every player that a general manager has been asked about over the past week or two, including Seattle with Felix Hernandez. I don't think Jack Cirencic, I haven't read or heard Jack Cirencic's quotes on Felix Hernandez as saying, "There's just no chance we're trading Felix Hernandez. We're not taking calls on him. We won't talk about it." He's just flat out said, "We're not shopping Felix Hernandez. Felix Hernandez isn't going anywhere. He's part of our plan." That's not to say if somebody didn't call up and offer the world, that that wouldn't change.
Well, another team that, and I know we're kind of going off the map here, but as you're saying things, it's kind of coming up in my mind. The New York Yankees seem to be one of those teams that always gets involved somehow, some way, whether it's in the trade deadline or whether it's in the winter meetings. And something that came out today, and I don't know if it got started in New York or Chicago, but that the Cubs were trying to needle the Yankees about Carlos Zambrano, even saying that they will foot the bill for most of his salary. But the Yankees have said, "We're not interested."
Right. And the idea there is that the Yankees don't want number three, number four, number five stars, and they certainly don't want a guy who comes with the baggage that Zambrano comes with. I mean, there are some non-pitching issues with Carlos Zambrano, non-money issues with Carlos Zambrano being, you know, I'm not sure what the word is, eccentric to say the least. He's a little bit out there sometimes, and while he's a good pitcher when he's on, he's certainly not a frontline impact guy that doesn't come with baggage, and the Yankees certainly don't want any part of that right now. They're looking for clear-cut answers that last beyond 2011, or they're not parting with prospects. And it sounds like they're not even interested, even if the guy comes free. The baggage is the first thing that comes to mind when it comes to Carlos Zambrano, because if you're going to get him for next to nothing, and maybe or maybe not, that was the case. We don't know if that was the case. We don't know if the Cubs and the Yankees actually spoke and they said, "Hey, we'll send Carlos Zambrano's entire salary, but you have to give us this," or, "We'll send this portion of the salary and you have to give us this." And that's when the Yankees said, "We don't have any interest." Or if the Yankees just flat out don't want Carlos Zambrano, even if they hand him over, I don't know what the case is, but it's clear the Yankees don't want to add any players, any pitchers, any starting pitchers to their rotation, unless it's a clear upgrade to what they already have. And I don't know that Zambrano is that. I certainly agree with that sentiment. Carlos Zambrano is not the answer for the New York Yankees.
Well, another player that was talked about in is Alfonso Soriano, and I had talked to Gordon Whitmire of the Chicago Sun-Times a few weeks ago, and I had asked him if the Cubs would be willing to sell off those parts, regardless of the contract, and he said if they could, they'd put a big old neon sign right in the front yard that says for sale. And I don't, you know, and he made a good point. I don't think, and you can disagree with me or agree with me or whatever you want to talk about, but I don't think the Cubs are going to find a team out there. They're going to willing to be the kind of team that's going to take on those contracts, you know, because Soriano is, I mean, still owed a ton of money, and Zambrano is the same problem. But is there a team out there besides the Yankees and maybe the Red Sox that actually can do that or will?
See, I don't think either of those two players, Zambrano or Alfonso Soriano, were tradable unless a ton of cash is coming back with them. And I think that was the idea with what Buster Olney at ESPN reported today, was that it was about Zambrano and a bunch of cash. That's the only way that it makes any sense whatsoever. I mean, nobody's going to take on Zambrano's contract without getting a bunch of money in return, not even the Yankees. And apparently they don't have any interest whatsoever. But with Soriano, it's even worse because he's owed $18 million a year through 2014. So he's still owed, what, $6 million for this year and has 3 additional years on top of that. So he's owed $60 million between now and the end of the 2014 season. That might be the most untradeable, unmovable contract that's out there right now for any player, let alone a player that's not really necessarily playing that well, probably belongs that designated hitter, and is certainly regressing.
Well,
So I'm not sure Soriano can be moved at all.
is that a deal you think that the Cubs would look back on and undo if they could?
I think when he signed that deal, was that 4 years ago now? I think a year and a half, maybe 2 years later, I think the Cubs were looking back saying, I'm not really sure what we were thinking on this. 8 years. I think that's the big thing. It's not the annual salary, the average. I think it ended up being an average of what, about $15, $16 million. That's really not the big issue. It's that you guaranteed him 8 years. It wasn't like he was 20 years old and you were keeping him through his prime years. This is an 8-year deal that's going to guarantee him $136 million that you're not going to be able to trade. And I think that's one aspect that general managers and even owners look at. If we sign a guy to a big deal and it's not really working out for us and we're not contending, are we going to be able to move this contract? Are we going to be able to trade this player and start over and get young players and go in another direction? And if the answer is no, then the contract probably shouldn't be offered, but they're stuck with it now. And I just don't see how there's any possible way they can move it. I don't think there's another deal out there on a player that you could even trade contract for contract. The Aaron Rowans and the Barry Zitos, I think the Soriano deal is the worst of them left, considering how much money is still owed to him.
Well, let's get to the Texas Rangers, and I didn't want to switch topics that quickly, but
Yes.
Carlos Beltran was a name that a lot of Ranger fans were talking about, and I will give a lot of the fans credit because a lot of them were tweeting me and emailing me saying this makes absolutely no sense because they've got David Murphy, they've got Indy Chavez, and they've got Craig Gentry in center field, and really they can ride those guys to a respectable level. I mean, this team's putting up 7, 8, 9 runs a game, or 20, depending on who the pitching is, and I don't know, Jason, from the very outset, I didn't understand it either. Now, I wasn't against the Rangers acquiring him because he's a big bat. You put it in the lineup and they're offensively stronger. But this to me seemed more like the Rangers pushing the price up on another team. Am I off base with that thought?
Actually, I think they were trying to get Beltran. I don't think at any point Beltran has been their main focus, but I think they really wanted Beltran. I think they looked at the price being asked for BJ Upton. I think they saw Colby Rasmus as a long shot. That's another subject for another day, maybe, because I'm not really sure why they weren't in those sweepstakes. Colby Rasmus is a pretty good young player that would have fit into their team right now. And same with BJ Upton. We haven't heard them real strong on BJ Upton. I think they're assuming, or they know, they've contacted these clubs and have a pretty good idea that the price is higher than what they're willing to pay right now at this particular point. And maybe because that's midseason, maybe they'd be more open to dealing the Martin Perez of the world if this were the winter and they were able to plan accordingly going into a season. But right now, I think they're going to focus on relievers, but that doesn't mean that Beltran wasn't a part of their plan. I really think they went hard after Beltran because they wanted him. He certainly wasn't a perfect fit, but I think because he was a rental, they thought they could get him cheap enough to make it worthwhile. And if it would have worked out, I think Robert Erlin and Neil Ramirez and players like that were the starting pitching prospects that Texas was willing to give up. I think it would have been worth it. But it depends on what else was going to have to be thrown in that package, and they weren't able to match a Zach Wheeler deal that the Mets really wanted. And they got, it looks like they're going to get Wheeler. I know that deal's not official yet, as Beltran has a 24-hour period to make a decision on whether he wants to go to San Francisco. But yeah, Texas wanted Beltran. I'm not really sure how far they would have gone to get him, but obviously not as far as San Francisco was willing to go, because the only way that Texas could have matched San Francisco's offer was to throw more players into the package or to offer Martin Perez, because he's the only pitcher in the Rangers organization that has that kind of carry, has the kind of value that Zach Wheeler has for the Giants. So really, it's on the pitching right now, and it looks like a reliever is where Texas is looking.
Well, but that's just my point. Nolan Ryan and John Daniels had to know that the Giants were more desperate than the Rangers were at that point because the Rangers didn't need him. The Giants, on the other hand, really needed that bat in the lineup. with Buster Posey out for the remainder of the season, they were the desperate team, and I think Daniels and Ryan knew that. And I think they knew if they pushed it a little bit farther, the Giants were going to give up their top prospects, whether it was Brown or whether it was Wheeler, and they ended up giving up Wheeler in the deal. But I still am going to stick by that. I don't know, and I know that you're not going to agree with me, and we're going to go different directions with this, but I just think that Daniels and Ryan knew that the Giants were desperate, and they knew if they pushed a little bit harder, the Giants would give up someone that they were not willing to give up 24 hours ago.
I don't think that has anything to do with it. I really don't. I don't think you push that hard for a player and have no interest in it. I think you get to a point where you know you're not going to be able to pay that price or you're not willing to pay that price. But again, like you and I talked about yesterday, that doesn't mean you bow out because it can push the price up for other clubs and it could have pushed the Giants in another direction. They could have went and landed a BJ Upton or a Josh Willingham or a Hunter Pence instead, and that could have left Texas in a spot where the price they were willing to pay was good enough. So that's certainly why they stayed in it. But I don't think the main focus, the main target, the main idea was to drive the price up. It was to get Beltran because there was always a chance that we're going to get Beltran until the Giants agreed to move Brown or Wheeler. It looks like Wheeler was the sticking point, not Gary Brown. And the Mets have players like Gary Brown. I can't imagine that that organization would value Gary Brown that much. But I also think that if it was Gary Brown, that there'd be other players involved. But the sticking point appears to have been Zach Wheeler this entire time. The Giants said, no, we're not moving Zach Wheeler. We're not moving top prospects for a 2 month rental. And that's certainly understandable. But from the Rangers' perspective, you just wait it out because you don't know for fact what the Giants are going to give up until it actually happens. And we don't know. Maybe Beltran changes his mind on San Francisco, and Beltran's still in play. I mean, nobody expects that to happen. But the two teams have come to an agreement, and Beltran hasn't officially said yes to this point. And it's been hours, so he certainly knows about it. So he's certainly sitting around thinking about it, talking about it with his people, talking about it probably with the Mets and with his family. So who knows? But you stay in it because you want the player. You don't stay in it solely to drive the price up for the Giants. It doesn't really help Texas all that much to drive the price up for the Giants, especially when Zach Wheeler is a player that's 3 years or 3 or 4 years away from the big leagues. It's not like they drove the price up for the Yankees or the Tigers or the Angels and it hurt them in the future, a team that Texas deals with on a regular basis in the American League.
Well, our first segment is over. Jason, we're going to step aside. And when we come back, Jason and I are going to break down what's next for the Texas Rangers. Heath Bell is definitely on the radar. Mike Adams could be there. And there are other relievers on the market. Kyle Farnsworth is another name. So when we come back, we'll break that all down. So stay with us. This is Scooping the Texas Rangers. Welcome back to Scooping the Texas Rangers, segment number two. Todd Kaufman alongside my buddy Jason from Prospect Insider. Jason Churchill, if you don't know who this guy is, you really need to. You need to follow him on Twitter, twitter.com/prospectinsider. And Jason, you and I were talking before we came back from break. And the one guy I wanted to ask you about, as far as the Rangers are concerned, and this is a guy that I had seen a tweet come out that said the Astros – asking price has come way down from where it was, and they'll quote take very little in return as long as they can move his contract, and that's Wandy Rodriguez. Is there a deal to be made if you're Texas? Is this a guy you would be interested in? Because if I'm the Rangers, I like this guy for a number three. Is that just me, or do you think he fits?
You know, I think he fits, and I think any quality arm fits the Rangers right now. I think the curious issue is the money. Texas certainly has the money, but they're a club that spends their money pretty wisely, and they're not throwing out Chan Hill Park contracts anymore. That's your grandfather's Texas Rangers. That's not your Rangers. So I'm not sure if Rodriguez fits unless the Astros are willing to send some cash in to even that out. If he's traded, he's guaranteed, I believe it's $38.5 million. That's a tough pill to swallow on a guy that's probably a number three at best in the American League. You do have to consider the league change and the ballpark change, you know, with the weather and the way the ball carries at that ballpark there in Arlington. Can Rodriguez, sustain his level of success? He's been a pretty solid arm for the Astros for the last couple of years, but he's not Roy Halladay. He's not Cliff Lee. He's not a guy that has the kind of stuff that just plays anywhere. And his track record is a little bit short for me. I'm not sure how much I'd be willing to pay him in terms of salary and in terms of prospects to get him from the Astros. But if that price comes down far enough and the Astros are willing to send some cash to make him a $7 or $8 million or a $9 million a year pitcher at best, I'd certainly be interested. I'm not sure what the Rangers think of him, because he is a number three tops for me. I'm not sure if he fits in as a one or a two on any contending club, but it might be pretty risky to bring him from the Astros, put him in a pennant race, and to give him that kind of money, that kind of salary, and to give up what it would take to get him, because it would certainly cost something. You're not going to get him for free. The Astros aren't going to give him away. You're still going to have to give up a Neil Ramirez, a Robbie Irwin, somebody of that nature to get things going for Rodriguez. But Hunter Pence, again, I'm going to bring him up myself because he's the more interesting guy here, and I'm not sure why more clubs aren't interested.
Well, as far as Wandy Rodriguez is concerned, he's owed $10 million next season, $13 million in 2013, and his $13 million club option becomes a player option if he's traded.
Right.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but that option isn't guaranteed, right? That's still his option to pick up if, in fact, he wants to stay in Texas through 2014.
Sure, but let's paint a picture here. Let's say he gets traded to a club, doesn't pitch very well. That's the scenario, and maybe, that's the scenario. That's the nightmare scenario for a club that picks him up and doesn't pitch very well, that you're going into that, and it just looks like he's not going to be worth that money. Now the club doesn't have an option. They don't have a choice. They're stuck with him, and he's certainly not going to opt out unless he thinks he can get a better deal on the open market. And if he's coming off poor performance, there's very little chance that he thinks, I'm going to give up this big money for the final year of my deal to go out and get a multi-year deal. I mean, is he Randy Wolf or is he better than that? Is he Ted Lilly or is he better than that? At that age, a couple years down the road, pitching in Texas, pitching in the American League, those numbers are bound to skyrocket at least a little bit. I would bet on his ERAs climbing to around the league average, at best. Moving leagues, changing leagues, learning a league as far as the hitters are concerned, that would be pretty risky to me. I wouldn't want to pick him up if I was an American League club, considering that. There's a good chance, at least in my mind, that he would pick up that option. I mean, guys like that don't leave money like that on the table. He's not a star, and there's a pretty decent chance that he regresses or puts up numbers that don't suggest he's worth that on an annual basis and wouldn't be able to get more money than that guaranteed on the open market. So, you're trying to predict the future here, and I just don't like the risk when it comes to something like that. But you're right, it isn't guaranteed. He would have to pick up that option. I just think there's a really good chance that he would.
Well, Wandy Rodriguez is 32 years old. Actually, just turned 32 a few months ago. So this is not a kid that's in his 20s anymore. And you're right. I mean, that is a lot of money. And I told this to somebody on Twitter earlier today. That's a lot of money to have in your back pocket, especially with Josh Hamilton and Nelson Cruz coming up in free agency, I believe, while Wandy would still be with the team. And I'd have to look that up to be sure. But that's a lot of money to be on the hook for, especially because you still have Michael Young's contract, and I believe you still owe 25, 26, something like that over the next 2 years. So you're already invested in something like $50 million in two players, just like that, if you were to trade for him.
And Rodriguez isn't a frontline guy. I mean, that's clear. I mean, you look at his numbers, you look at, even if you just believe in earned run average enough to, for the conversation here, a 3.02 ERA a couple of years ago in 09, and that's the best he's put forward. He was a 3.60 last year, and he's at 3.60 this year. And while that's quality in any ballpark in any league, he's not a guy who gives you 230 innings. He's not Roy Halladay. He's not Cliff Lee. He's not Felix Hernandez, Justin Verlander. And he's had a little bit of history of missing time. I mean, he missed, what, 8 or 9 starts in 08. He missed a couple of starts earlier this year. I'm not trusting that enough to give up anything of value and to take on that kind of risk when it comes to salary. When there are other guys out there you can go get. If you want to go get a starting pitcher right now, give up value for it, even if it means one of your two top prospects, go look at James Shields, go look at Yimaldo Jimenez. or wait for the winter and see if something else can work out, because the Rangers right now are in a position where, yeah, they could use a starter, they could use a reliever or two, but you start giving up your prospects, you start giving up your Martin Perez's or your Jurickson Profars or even your Erlins and your Ramirez. What happens over the winter when a better pitcher, becomes available, and you don't have the necessary means to go get him without starting to worry about the depth in your minor league system? That's been the strength of that farm system for a while, is that they've had depth and that they're moving them only for the right player. The players that they move for Cliff Lee, they're not going to miss him because they had guys behind them to fill the holes. But if they start trading for guys that don't work out, that don't give them what they wanted, that they don't pan out. Wandy Rodriguez is certainly a candidate to go to the American League and totally implode and put up a 5 ERA. I certainly wouldn't bet against that. That's just real risky. I'm just not sure if that's a fit. I'm not sure if that's a fit for most teams. I think if Rodriguez gets traded, it's to a National League club.
Well, and here's the theory that has been brought up to me, and I have been of the opinion that I think this thought is absolutely asinine. And this person that I talked to thought bringing a National League pitcher to an American League team meant this guy was not going to have success because he's only had National League experience. Do you buy into that?
No, I do buy that the American League is a better league. You face the DH. There are some hitters' ballparks over here that are just as unforgiving as Colorado and Houston and places like that in the National League. There's just more hitters. That's the way it is. You get the DH over here. It's a new league that he'd have to learn as well. And for some reason, and you and I talked about this a little bit the other night, for some reason, there's just more fastballs thrown in the National League. It's strange. But there's more fastballs thrown in the National League than the American League. And you could even remove the pitcher and the designated hitter from that. And you bring a guy like Wander Rodriguez is over here, and he's throwing a lot of breaking balls. Well, the American Leaguers are used to that. They see more of them on a regular basis anyway. Yeah, I mean, look at the top flight. Even with Lee and Halliday going to the National League over the last 2 years, look at the top flight pitchers that are putting up big numbers in the American League right now. Shields, Weaver, Herron, Hernandez, Verlander, there's so many of them. The National League can't quite match up, especially when you take into consideration that there's an extra major stick in the lineup every time you go out there. So there certainly is something to that. You have to learn a new league, you have to face better hitters on a regular basis, and you have to face the extra hitter. I don't think National League pitchers would struggle to have success if they're good pitchers. You bring Tim Lincecum over here, he'll be fine, and he could find a way to be just as good and put up just as good of numbers as he would otherwise. And you have to take the ballpark into consideration when you look at flat, ERA and things of that nature. But he could certainly have success. Matt Cain could have success. Zach Greinke certainly had success over here. Roy Halladay had success over here. Cliff Lee's had success in both leagues. But when you bring a mediocre pitcher into the American League that was solid in the National League, but he could be mediocre in the American League, he's probably going to be mediocre because they just face so many better hitters. They're just better hitters. You line up the lineups in the American League versus the National League, there's just better lineups. And that's just the way it is. It's always going to be that way until the DH is either put in both leagues or removed from baseball altogether. So there's certainly that possibility. But I think the big thing for me is the ballpark for Rodriguez. I would worry that the heat and the ballpark, the way the ball flies out of the ballpark to all fields. I mean, you don't have that center field cushion in Arlington that you have in Houston. And again, you're facing David Ortiz, you're not facing Josh Beckett.
Yeah, and you talk about fastballs, and we're talking about pitchers as well. Neftali Feliz last night, and I don't know what you think personally of Neftali Feliz as far as a closer. And you and I had this conversation the other night, and I said I really truly believe the Rangers want to try him out again as a starter in spring training next year. But for right now, he does not look like he has the confidence of a closer. And the other thing is, he has thrown way too many fastballs. I don't know if it was you that threw out this number, but he was throwing something like 82% of his pitches were fastballs. As a closer, you're not going to throw a fastball in what, fastball after fastball after fastball by major league hitters, especially not as a closer.
That 82% number is really not as high as I expected it to be. When you started to spit that sentence out, I thought it was going to be a lot higher than that, because I've seen games where he hasn't thrown anything but. So 82% is really not that bad. I'd like to see what it is in save situations only, or in one run save situations only, where the game is tight, the game is literally on the line, and not necessarily 4-1 or 3-0. That'd be an interesting stat to see. But again, and I threw this out on Twitter last night, and this has been thrown out before by others. he's struggling against right-handed hitters. And that tells me that he's flying open a little early. He's giving away his pitches, and he's becoming predictable. And the pitch selection, not throwing his breakable, not throwing his off-speed pitches, is certainly a problem to hitters from the left side of the plate and the right side of the plate. But his numbers against right-handers are a worry. I think the on-base percentage is almost 400. He's not striking guys out. I think six. He struck out six right-handers this year.
Yeah, that's.
Considering that three quarters of the hitters in the league are right-handed, or at least two-thirds. That's wow. I mean, and he's still throwing hard. It's not like he's throwing 89. He's still up into the mid 90s. Maybe the zip has gone on that fastball. I haven't seen Feliz a lot lately, but maybe some of the zip has gone on that fastball and he's just become too predictable. And the breaking ball is just not effective. Maybe he's afraid to throw the breaking ball because he's not feeling it right now, but he's certainly got to mix it up. And that's probably one of the reasons why they're so adamant about adding a relief pitcher. And maybe that's why they're adamant about adding a relief pitcher that can close for them. Maybe they're losing some confidence in Feliz down the stretch, and they don't want to have to go to him in October if they can go to a guy like Heath Bell.
Well, speaking of Heath Bell, that seems to be the one name after the Beltran race, or at least it's over in a lot of people's eyes, and I think you and I can agree that this race is more likely than not over. So the Rangers seem to have moved their attention to Heath Bell and or I shouldn't say and or Heath Bell or Mike Adams, and Bell seems to be the target that they're after. Talk about a little bit about what the Padres are going to want in return as far as names and. If it were you, is it Heath Bell or is it Mike Adams?
I think it's Heath Bell for the reasons that we just talked about. I think the Rangers appear to be focused on Bell, and it seems that if Feliz is struggling, that would be the natural reason why. He hasn't really been himself most of the season, and while his numbers certainly aren't terrible, I certainly wouldn't feel as confident giving the ball to Feliz in a one-run game in October this year as I did last year. He was pretty darn good last year. Maybe the league is figuring him out. Maybe that's part of the issue as well, but I have to believe there are some pitchability issues there with how he feels about his breaking ball and maybe some delivery problems. But it sounds like Heath Bell is the guy they're focused on, and that may also be because the Padres would prefer not to deal Mike Adams. They're certainly not pushing Mike Adams on clubs. I know that the Phillies prefer Mike Adams, but they're also in on Bell, and I think that's the main competition. But the fact that Adams is the preference of the Philadelphia Phillies could actually help the Rangers get Heath Bell, and it seems like they're the club that's most aggressive to get Bell from the Padres right now.
What is it going to take for in right now? Are the Rangers the front runners from everything that you're hearing? Are they the team that is in the driver's seat right now? Because I'm really surprised because after the Cardinals made their deal and after they got the relievers that they got, I'm really surprised that they're still in the race for Heath Bell right now.
I'm not sure that they are. This is one of those situations where it actually makes sense to stay in it to drive the price up for a team that you might have to face in the playoffs to fit drive the price up on one of your rivals. Heath Bell's a fit in St. Louis, but if they've kind of filled that role a little bit, or at least complemented their bullpen, getting what they got from the Toronto Blue Jays. Although I'm not sure I'd trust any of those guys in the ninth inning in October, certainly not as much as Heath Bell. But they got to stay in it for themselves, and they got to stay in it to drive the price up for other clubs. I mean, there are other clubs in that for the Phillies. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And while it certainly could drive the price up for the Rangers too, the Cardinals have to be thinking about other clubs like Milwaukee or the Phillies and even the Braves. There's been talk that the Braves, if they don't have to give up one of those top four arms, could be in the market for a relief pitcher, and Bell might be a guy they get some interest in as the trade deadline nears. But it's really for the Cardinals, it's really about driving the price up. That would certainly make sense to me anyway. But they could certainly use Bell as well. It's not like they acquired a hands down, shut the door, premium closer from the Blue Jays in the deal for Rasmus.
Does Heath Bell make a lot of sense in your mind for Texas? And because the original talk when Heath Bell first came up, Bell was open about saying, "Look, I'll take an eighth inning role for, wherever I go. If they already have a closer, I got no problem being the setup man." However, he also finished with he wants to be the closer for who he signs with next year. And he was on with Jim Bowden, I think, on ESPN Radio, and he said he'd be willing to stay on beyond this season if the team that traded for him wanted him. Now the Rangers, you've already said, have the money to sign this guy, and I believe wholeheartedly it's going to be 10 to 12 million a year for probably 3 years at best. But if you're the Rangers, and I know this package is probably going to start with Robbie Erlein because they're not going to trade Martin Perez, But San Diego and especially their fans have been saying we want Jerks and Profar, and you and I both know that's not going to happen. So that being said, Robbie Erlin and who else?
I think Erlin could be the headliner in a deal for Bell. It really depends on what the Cardinals and the Phillies are indicating that they're willing to give up. I can't imagine that either one of those clubs would be willing to give up top prospects. We're not talking about Carlos Martinez or Shelby Miller from St. Louis, and we're not talking about Dominic Brown or Jared Cozart from Philadelphia. From Philly, I think we're talking about Jonathan Singleton. But if the Padres want pitching, if they're valuing the acquisition of young pitching more than they are other positions, then I think that's where the Rangers have the advantage because they have the Neil Ramirez's, there's Erlin, there's Mendez, there's other guys in that organization that have some value that they can add to a Robbie Erlin. But if Robbie Erlin's the headliner, really you're just trying to fill that out. Maybe an Erlin Engel Beltre deal makes sense for Heath Bell. They get some upside out of Beltre, even though he's certainly not an elite prospect, and the Rangers certainly aren't planning on Engel Beltre starting for them on a regular basis in the future. That would make sense to me. I don't know that the Padres, one way or the other, prefer pitching or not. I haven't heard that one way or the other, but it seems like clubs are really focused on getting young pitching right now. It's kind of gone back to the way it was in the late 80s and early 90s, where clubs are just dying to get young pitchers into their organization. And that certainly rung true with the Mets and their deal for Carlos Beltran and getting Zach Wheeler. I think Erlin could headline a package. I think the value matches up there, and you're not talking about another equal or better player than Erlin to necessarily get Heath Bell. And I don't see how Philly is going to be willing to give up their top pitching prospect, or even Atlanta, if Atlanta gets involved, be willing to give up their top guy. They certainly could compete with the Rangers if they chose to. And I think that's probably John Daniels' worry at this point, that if they don't offer the best prospect they have, they may not get him. But that's probably a better alternative. Is it Martin Perez for Heath Bell or no Heath Bell? I think the Rangers would choose no Heath Bell. So I think Rangers fans can relax. I don't think Perez is going to San Diego for a rental pitcher and Bell. I think they would look elsewhere in that case. But as far as him re-signing, he's also given strong indications that he wants to come back to San Diego, whether he gets traded from the Padres this year or not. So I'm not sure how much trading for Heath Bell helps the Texas Rangers at closer for next year. So if
Yeah.
they're going to move Feliz to starter, that doesn't help.
I was going to say the same thing because the people I've talked to in San Diego all confirmed that Bell has told the Padres he's more than willing to give them the San Diego discount, the famous San Diego discount, to return to the Padres, whether it's staying through this year and not being traded or being traded this year and coming right back to San Diego. So that has to be in the back of Texas's mind or whoever wants him to think, okay, we already know that he wants to go to San Diego. Do we absolutely need this guy, or do we need to look elsewhere?
On the other side of that, Todd, is the idea that San Diego's probably not going to give Heath Bell 3 years and $30 million, or even 3 years and $25 million. They're not a club that has a ton of money to spend, and if they don't trade Mike Adams, Mike Adams can just fit right in as closer. They have other guys that can step in and fill in for Mike Adams' present role as setup man. I don't know that it makes a whole lot of sense for San Diego to go out and sign Heath Bell, whether he stays with them the rest of this year or they trade him to Texas or Philly or Atlanta or the Yankees or wherever he ends up going. So maybe the Yankees, or excuse me, maybe the Rangers are thinking about that too, because it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I'd be really surprised if Heath Bell got a 3 year deal for 8 or 10 or $12 million a year from the San Diego Padres. They just don't have that kind of money to wrap up in a player. It's one of the reasons why they considered moving Bell before the season started, because he's making almost $8 million and their payroll is what, $40 million? I mean, that's a lot of money to be paying a closer on a club that's not spending money on the rest of their roster.
Well, I was talking about the Rangers. I know the Padres don't have that money to spend, but I think if he wants to stay with the Rangers, I think that's what it's going to take to re-sign him.
Certainly. And if Bell knows he can get 10 or 12 million from other clubs, the discount isn't $4 million a year. It's 8 or 9. You know what I mean? Or maybe he takes 2 years with an option to stay with San Diego. But if you're San Diego, again, do you want to wrap up 2 years and almost $20 million in a closer? I just don't see that happening. I really don't. Not when you already have Mike Adams in your organization. I mean, that could change if Adams is traded. They could be more apt to keep Bell. But that's a smart front office that handles bullpens really well, and I have full confidence that they'll make the right decision when it comes to that, because they learned under Theo Epstein and the Boston Red Sox organization, and you look at how they handle their relief corps over there. They only spend money on their bullpen when they have to, and when that organization was struggling, and they were still winning enough to be interesting, but they were struggling enough to not go out and spend money and trade pieces on bullpen guys. They didn't do it. They won't make that move unless it's absolutely necessary. So I don't see Hoyer and McLeod and those fellas in San Diego making deals like that and handing money over to closers until they're ready to win, because that's what you do. Relief pitching, you can find it. Seattle's found two closers out of nowhere, David Arthur and Brandon Leake, two quality closers out of absolutely no one. They got Arthur for nothing. So he fell back to San Diego. I just don't see it happening. So that could help the Rangers believe that they'd have a shot at re-signing Bell next year, but there's no guarantees of that. So you really, what you're trading for and what the value of that trade is to the Rangers is what Bell gives you the rest of the season and the draft picks coming forward if he signs elsewhere over the winter.
Well, we talked about outfielders and we've talked about relievers, and I was going to take a break, but when Jason gets on a roll, I don't like to stop him. And one guy that got mentioned today in Texas, and it wasn't anything serious, it was just, hey, we want this guy, go get him, was Ubaldo Jimenez from Colorado. Now, the last I heard, they were asking for the moon for this guy. And even Troy Rank with the Denver Post said it's a 50-50, and even went as far as to say it's probably only a 20-30% chance he gets moved. But I think the Yankees were interested, the Reds were interested, but would you agree that the Rangers would have to give up far too much to get him?
I'm not sure if that's the case. I think the Colorado Rockies are an interesting organization because they have catching, they have some pitching in their organization, and they have position players. So they're really looking for they're looking for specific infielders. And while they would certainly want Jurickson Profar, even though they have Troy Tulowitzki, because Profar is probably the number one prospect in the organization in Texas, but I'm not sure you'd have to give up Profar, but I think you certainly have to give up Perez, and I'm not sure how the Rockies feel about Perez. Early indications are that they don't think Perez is a future number one, and that's one of the things that Colorado would want. They'd either want a pitcher that's young, under club control, beyond 2012, that's not costing a ton of money, that has some number one upside, like an Edinson Volquez. That's why Volquez's name has been mentioned from the Reds, that it doesn't necessarily have to be a prospect. Or they'd want a guy with number one upside that's down in the minors, that's within a year or two of the big leagues. So I'm not sure if Perez by himself can really headline a deal like that. I think from the Rangers they'd have to throw in just about everybody else, Tanner Scheppers, Ramirez, Erlen, guys like that. It looks like Colorado's looking to fill multiple holes in a trade for Jimenez, but they do want that top pitching prospect, and I'm not sure if Perez gets that done right now. I think the Rockies, I'm thinking from the Rockies' perspective, I'd probably wait until the winter if I couldn't get a Manny Banuelos or Shelby Miller or Carlos Martinez or somebody along those lines in return for Jimenez. And there's news out, the last couple of minutes. I just got a text from a guy down in Colorado that the Indians are interested, and that's being reported somewhere now, that the Indians are legitimate contenders for Ubaldo Jimenez, and they're not a club that has that future number one starting pitcher that they can offer the Rockies too. So maybe the price is coming down a little bit because clubs like the Yankees aren't willing to give up their number one pitching prospects.
Yeah, I just saw the same thing. It's actually from Ken Rosenthal. He says the Indians have been working aggressively to upgrade their offense and rotation. He says, quote, "They're thinking big in multiple deals."
There you go.
The Yankees and Reds have been two suitors, and I'm surprised. Usually, when I think about teams that are aggressive in deals or at least looking at players so they can get a big return for the teams trading that player, the Cincinnati Reds aren't exactly the team I think of.
No, they just have pieces. They have pieces. I don't want to say they have pieces to spare, but when you're getting an impact player in return, they have pieces they could part with and not miss terribly. And there were reports earlier today that the Rockies wouldn't require the Reds to include shortstop prospect Billy Hamilton or catching prospect Devin Mesoraco in a deal to get Jimenez. So that obviously means guys like Yasmani Grandal, Aroldis Chapman, even Yonder Alonso, players like that have to be involved in a deal between Cincinnati and Colorado. I'm not convinced that Jimenez gets moved this summer. I think that's a player, and the Rockies are in a situation right now where they could probably get more teams involved and get more out of a club like the New York Yankees or even the Boston Red Sox, Texas Rangers included, over the winter when they'd be willing to part with a player that's already on the roster. Because if you're the Rangers and Colorado asks you in December, hey, we'll send you Ubaldo Jimenez, but we have to have both Gerrit Cullen and Martin Perez, don't you have to think about that?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, and that's also a deal that if I'm Colorado anyway, I'd like the idea of getting two left-handers with plus velocity and at least mid-rotation ability with some upside to be better than that. That they'd consider that, but that's not necessarily something Texas would be willing to do right now, to give up both those guys because they don't know the situation with CJ Wilson. They don't know the situation with Neftali Feliz as far as moving him to the starting rotation. So once they get a chance to assess that and get a feel for those situations, they might actually need Ubaldo Jimenez and be more willing to part with more prospects, more young players, the Derek Collins of the world. And the same with the Yankees. You get a better idea what the player's about the rest of the season. You get a better idea of where you stand going into next year. You can plan to be without the players that you're willing to put into a package. So I see Jimenez going maybe over the winter, but it's interesting. Jimenez is a good fit for Texas, so I certainly wouldn't give up hope if Jimenez is still a Rocky after July 31st. I think that could be something that the Rangers take a look at over the winter.
Well, there's a little tidbit in here that they're calling the Rangers all but out of this race, and even goes as far as to say the Rangers are no longer considered a candidate to acquire the right-hander. The Rockies, according to this report, their asking price is three sure thing young players, including one pitcher who goes into their rotation immediately.
Right, there's the near ready or already in the big leagues pitcher with upside, and that's why Volquez makes a little bit of sense, although he's been shaky this year, so that's why that deal hasn't got done. But I'm not sure what teams have that. Contending teams aren't gonna trade a pitcher from their rotation that's young and has that kind of upside for Jimenez, because that's basically what Jimenez is. He's got a little bit more of a track record than a rookie guy, but I'm not sure why a club would do that at this point, especially a contending team. So we're really talking about clubs that are looking at 2012 and beyond that may have the most interest in Jimenez if that's going to be the asking price and they're going to stick to that. Because I'm not sure if, you look at the Yankees organization, Banuelos, I don't even know if he's ready next year. And he's certainly their top guy. The Red Sox really don't have that high-end potential number one. Renato's probably a number two. That's an interesting situation. That's interesting. I'm not sure if the Indians can do it. I'm not even sure the Reds can do it if that's what the Rockies are going to stick to. So I'd bet that Jimenez stays this summer, stays with the Rockies, and maybe becomes available again over the winter, and that's where the Rangers might be able to get involved.
Well, and you're going to hate when I say this because there are a lot of people, media included, that I've heard say this, that they'd be willing in the right deal, and whether it's Jimenez or a frontline number one starter, that they'd be more than willing to part with one Derek Holland.
Yeah, but would they part with Holland and Martin Perez, or Holland and Profar, or Holland and Ramirez and Erlin? I mean, it's going to take quite a bit to get Jimenez, obviously.
Yeah.
I was just surprised that they wouldn't ask for Hamilton or Mesoraco from the Reds necessarily. I'm not sure how much truth there is to that, but that was a little surprising to see because those are probably the two most attractive players in that organization over in Cincinnati. But that's interesting because it's certainly going to take more than Holland to get Jimenez.
Well, in the last pitcher that I want to talk about, and I'm not going to wrap up with him. I'm going to ask you about a guy that a lot of Ranger fans are not all that happy with, and I think you know who I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But Hiroki Kuroda has a no trade clause with the Dodgers, and it seems that things keep going back and forth with him. First, it was he didn't want to go to the East Coast. He was not going to waive his no trade for the Yankees or Red Sox or anybody on the East Coast. Then he says he's keeping his options open. Now there are reports that he's not going to leave Los Angeles at all. Do you expect him to be moved, or do you think he stays in LA?
I think he stays because I think from what I gather, he would okay a deal to Boston or New York. And I don't think either of those two clubs are interested. So I think it's Boston, New York, or staying in LA. And I don't think either of those two clubs are interested enough to give up what the Dodgers would like to get in return for Kuroda. So I think he stays in LA. And that's unfortunate for the Dodgers, but I could certainly understand it from Kuroda's standpoint. That's in his contract. But as far as how he connects to the Rangers and how that might work out for the Rangers, one of the things I was talking to a scout with yesterday is how Kuroda, while he's usually around even as far as ground ball fly ball ratio goes, but in spurts, he's a severe fly ball pitcher, and he's even more so this year than in years past. That would concern me greatly if I was if I was a Texas Ranger and I was looking for a starting pitcher, Kuroda would scare me because of that. That's not something that I had realized that I had noticed this year from Kuroda until I was talking to a scout from the Pittsburgh Pirates last night. And he said, I've seen Kuroda and he's elevating his pitches, and hitters are getting a little bit more loft on his balls. And while he hasn't given up, a ton more, home runs than he normally does, it is a little higher. I think he's at 14 and 128 innings, 127 innings, and he only gave up 15 and almost 200 innings last year. So there's certainly evidence there that a home run could be a problem if he moved to a ballpark that wasn't as forgiving as Dodger Stadium.
Well, the one guy that I wanted to talk to you about, and this is a guy that I have rooted for so hard, and I've gotten to the point where I'm just about ready to throw my arms up and go, it's not going to happen with you, and that's Chris Davis. Adrian Beltre goes on the disabled list. Chris Davis comes back up, and I'm thinking, okay. And I always think this, and there are a lot of fans that are right there with me that think, okay, now's the time. Now's the time that Chris is going to figure it out. Now is the time that Chris Davis is going to be the player that we've seen in AAA. And then he becomes the only player that doesn't get a hit in a 28 hit route. He goes 0 for 6. What the what?
You know what? This is going to get a little bit scout geeky, but it's all about his swing and his pitch recognition and his overall discipline. That swing is still long. He's going to strike out a ton, and when he connects, he's going to hit a lot of fly balls. And while that's good in a way because he's got the power to hit a lot of balls out of the ballpark, you saw what he was doing in AAA. I mean, that was insane. That was absurd. You get up here where the pitchers are smarter, better breaking balls, they command the fastball better, change speeds on a regular basis. He's had problems with that his entire career and hasn't gotten any better. It's not better now than it was 2 years ago, when he first got a look in the big leagues. They got to do something to cut that swing down a little bit, and I'd have to break his swing down on video to suggest what that might be. But a lot of times for hitters, it's eliminating a load, some sort of hand movement that goes from a hitting position to back toward the catcher and then back toward the pitcher to connect with the ball. Eliminating that allows hitters to get to the ball quicker. It's a shorter path to the baseball that could eliminate some of the contact problems that he's having. What's he got? 68 at bats and 21 strikeouts. So that's actually good for Chris Davis right now. So they need to work on that swing with Chris Davis. I'm not sold that he can play third base every day, but he's not going to kill you. So he'll be okay there filling in for Beltre for a couple of weeks. But I think Beltre is one of those 4A guys that might belong in the National League. Go to the National League, figure it out. I mean, the fact that Aubrey Huff went to the NL and exploded, and the fact that Burrell was good in the National League, horrible in the American League, went back to the National League, was good again. It's not a coincidence.
Well, you said Beltre needs to go to the National League. You meant Davis.
Excuse me, Davis.
Yeah,
Yes.
okay. Ranger fans are going to kill you for saying that. I just want to clear
Send Beltre to the National League. No,
it up.
Davis just might be one of those guys who, he's seeing too many breaking balls. And again, we get back to the whole more breaking balls are thrown in the American League. That's just the way it is. Send Davis to the National League. Maybe it can help. He gets in a ballpark in a situation where he's playing on an everyday basis and doesn't have to worry about getting benched or getting sent back to AAA. Send him to a young club. You know where he fits? And this would be a good spot for him? Pittsburgh. He can play third or first, and in a lineup that's decent but not good, could certainly use his power, and he'd get an opportunity to maybe play every day. But it's still a team that competes, so he's not playing on a team where they're not playing for anything,
Yeah.
like Seattle or Oakland or Kansas City. Maybe that's a good situation for him, but changing leagues is probably a good idea for Chris Davis.
Well, the Nationals are also someone that, or I shouldn't say the Nationals, I'm sorry, the Orioles are someone that need a first baseman. So, that might be a fit. And they've got Jeremy Guthrie that they can give up. Koji Urahara is another one that has been mentioned, but it seems to me the Orioles are going to end up keeping him instead of trading him.
I wouldn't be surprised, even with Beltre on the DL, I wouldn't be surprised if Davis was included in a deal to get the Rangers a relief pitcher. He could add some value to one of those clubs, especially if it's a club like San Diego in the National League. Could certainly be included in that. He's certainly not going to be the number one piece, maybe not even the number two piece, but he's a pretty intriguing guy that still has some upside that if you can make some mechanical changes with that swing, there's a chance that he has success. But if he turns out to be Brandon Wood, I don't think it would surprise a whole lot of people because his pitch recognition isn't very good, and it hasn't gotten better in the last 2 years.
Well, San Diego already has Kyle Blanks at first and Chase Headley at third, so I don't really know where Davis fits in.
They do, but how much do they believe in Blanks? at this point. If they believed in it, wouldn't they call him up a lot sooner? I mean, Rizzo's their guy at first base, certainly, and Headley can move to left field. So if you can acquire a bat and he's like the second or third piece in a deal, I'd certainly have interest. You can't just bank on Headley being your all-star third baseman and Rizzo figuring it out, because he certainly struggled in the big league. So you just acquire pieces. So while it may not be perfect, if I'm San Diego, I'd certainly have a little interest in Chris Davis, especially if he's the second or third guy in a deal for Bell.
Well, Blanks is up with the big league team, and I know he was coming off Tommy John surgery last year, and I know he came up not too long ago, and they tried Rizzo out, and all the fans were gung ho about him, and he just really did struggle, and I think he's been sent back to Triple A if I'm not mistaken. But
Yes.
right now, Jason, as far as the Rangers are concerned, we've talked about Heath Bell. Is there a starter, and I want to close with this, is there a starter in your mind that you think is going to be in a Texas uniform by Sunday?
I really don't. I don't see a match out there that's easy to predict going forward. We talked about Wandy Rodriguez. If they're really worried about the back end of their rotation, they could show some interest in some legitimate back end guys like Brett Myers. But I'm not sure that there's a fit out there that really significantly improves their organization. There are a lot of guys that make sense to try to go after. We talked about Jimenez too, James Shields. Those guys certainly fit as far as their talent goes and their abilities. But as far as what it would cost and what the other clubs would be looking for, the Rays and the Rockies in this situation, I'm not sure that there's a fit there with the Rangers, at least this summer. That's something that could happen over the winter months. I think they're going to add at least one reliever. I think it's possible they add two relievers, and really give themselves an opportunity to make it a six-inning game, and then throw out there their two new relievers and Nathaniel Feliz in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, and match up with guys like Rhodes and I'm drawing a blank. Darren Oliver. There we go. The 50. They have a 50-year-old reliever and a 60-year-old reliever. I couldn't remember one of their names. How about that? I'm a 60-year-old today.
He has a sense of humor. Check that out.
Yeah, that's not always detectable on Twitter or the internet. But yeah, I certainly do. I can certainly see him adding two guys. I've heard that before. That they're not. That if they acquired Heath Bell, for example, if that deal went down right now, they wouldn't necessarily be done adding relievers. They could certainly look to add another guy and strengthen their bullpen. I mean, I'd rather bet on Koji Uehara coming in the seventh inning than Mark Lowe, just because he throws strikes. And I'm a fan of Lowe. He's just not consistent. He just doesn't control the zone very well. His command leaves him quite a bit. Not necessarily a reliable guy late in games. And when you get into October, relief pitchers become that much more important. So Texas is certainly going to October. That has to be their plan. I could see him adding Bell or Adams or another reliever, and then still being in the market for a setup type guy. So it's certainly going to be interesting, but I don't see a starter.
Well, that is the great Jason Churchill. And as we wrap up, we went almost an hour. And my thanks to Jason Churchill. If you want to reach him on Twitter, twitter.com/prospectinsider. And trust me, he's not the angry Seattle Mariners fan he was called today. Although, congratulations, Jason. The Mariners got a win.
Hey, how about that? That was fun. A little Phil Hughes remedy there. Yankees couldn't happen to a better team, right?
Well, I want to do something real quick, and this is for a good friend of mine, Gavin Dawson. There you go, man. Gavin Dawson became a dad today. Little Kennedy Dawson was born today. And he becomes a dad for the first time. So there's one for you, Gavin. So for Jason Churchill, myself, Todd Kaufman, this is Scooping the Texas Rangers. And we'll see you on the flip side. So long.